Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 92, being recorded on the 2nd of September, 2015, with special guest Thomas Tallius. My name is Sujit DeMello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and our special guest. Now, Evan, I want to thank you for inviting Thomas to this podcast. I can't wait to hear from him. He brings a lot of perspective from the part of Microsoft that he works in. But before we get to him, let's just do a quick round of updates that happened this past week. First off, right off the bat, is this, and Thomas, feel free to chime in if any of these are near to you or you're interested in any of these updates. The first is the announcement of the GS series. They've added the premium storage to some of the largest VMs we have in Azure now. So, so what this is it's taken the large, what are the G series?
Yeah. I've heard rumors on the joke that's made, but I don't think we can say it publicly.
Godzilla series, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think there's some licensing issues there.
So it's a giant series, and then on top of that, they've added the SSDs, and so now they're even faster. So just amazing performance out there. So that's now available. And then there's on the app, you know, I think we spoke last week about the Azure Logic Apps, and there are some enhancements to that now that you could, the SDK has an update, you can manage your Logic Apps using C#. I think previously you had to use script and things like that, but now you could use C# to do that. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Let's see, what else do we got here? Evan, I saw this one on the directory sync hard matching. So
in Active Directory, right, there's a immutable ID that's kind of this base 64 hash of the GUID. In Azure, what we do in Azure AD, we try and match those. And Azure does, I think we call it soft matching. Right. I've been away from the space now a little bit, so I'm starting to forget some of it. But the soft matching, we try and take a best guess at which on-premises user matches the cloud user based on UPN, you know, some other properties. But if you know for sure that somebody is this person, you can basically fix the immutable ID. And once the immutable ID is stamped in Azure AD, that's a hard link. It will not change if some of the other properties of the account change. Right, so that's a great way. Like if somebody's just not matching right, they're not syncing up between on-prem and cloud users, you can basically go and enforce it.
Oh, okay. And this is something that already existed, I'm just trying to read this over.
This has existed. This is kind of one of the core things for Azure AD Sync. But we see people all the time trying to figure. You know, they can't. It's you get an email every day from Azure AD for users that don't sync properly, so we can't match them up. And so this is kind of always an ongoing issue for people of, hey, I know this person is this cloud person. How can I force them to match up when the soft match is not doing it?
Mm. And so there is a little PowerShell commandlet that we'll put that in the show notes, but that tells you how to set this immutable ID using a command.
Yep.
That's great. And then just a quick update on the Azure ML, the machine learning facility is now available in the Western Europe area, which is in Amsterdam. And again, I think we spoke about it last week. Sometimes because of data sovereignty requirements, it's important to have these in different data centers so that additional customers can take advantage of that, especially in Europe, I guess, you know, where the data resides is a sensitive topic. And this way now they'll be able to run their Azure ML jobs, processing their data locally, pretty much within the Europe area. So that's a roundup of all the updates. Any of these sound interesting to you, Thomas?
Well, I think you haven't really mentioned any recent SQL Server or SQL Azure updates, but yeah, I guess we can. I guess when we talk, we can. I can probably list a few things that came out recently.
That sounds great. Well, Evan, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Yeah, sure. So Thomas is an architect in the, and I'm gonna have to call it SQL Azure, right? Because that it was the original. That's kind of still sticks in my head, but an architect on the SQL Azure team, known him, oh, it's probably been, what were we figuring out before the show? It's probably been 6 years-ish.
Maybe. Yeah, six-ish, yeah.
Yeah, and we spent many late nights working on some nasty issues early on. But I thought it would be really neat for this series to, invite somebody who actually is involved in building this stuff. Right? We've had some PMs on in the past who talk about, the features that they're trying to do. But at the end of the day, that PM has this feature. Somebody's actually got to figure out how to implement it. And I guess, Thomas, when we first met, you were actually coding stuff. I guess you were like a dev lead or something at the time, but now you're more in the architecting
Yeah, I'm
stuff.
more of an architect. But yeah, I think when originally when we met, I was working on a high availability sort of implementation for SQL Azure.
Right.
So I owned the replication stack and maintaining multiple replicas of a database, creating additional copies when needed, sort of doing quorum commits and all those sort of data integrity type of things. So
Yeah.
needless to say, that area is very sort of intricate, and you have to be really, really careful, right? Because of potential of something going wrong is yeah, you don't really want to mess up there.
Well, I would say there's both the performance or the data integrity, and then there's the performance aspect as well, right? I mean.
Yeah, that is true. Is like balancing latency and safety, right? This in any sort of multi-replica system, right? You always have this trade-off of how fast can you go, and do you always want to wait for slowest replica, or how many replicas you need to commit data before you sort of acknowledge it back to application.
Yeah, right. No, definitely. And that's, like you said, key part to this. How did you, when we first met, like we said, you were kind of owning this part. You and I would do a lot of troubleshooting together trying to solve customer issues. But how, I don't know that you ever told me, like, how you got started in the SQL Azure space. I
Well,
mean,
actually, I started SQL in I joined SQL Server team in I think all the way back in 2003, but I really started working in the cloud space in a late 05 and then early 06. But initially, we focused on building database system for the internal cloud customers. So many of our internal Microsoft properties that like MSN or similar, right? We had those huge data volumes where it was and they were sharding on say by their own customer or sort of. So we tried to build a scale out system, which is if you look at the current features in Azure SQL DB, that's probably whereas elastic scale or sharding features were probably a parallel to that, and many of them sort of originate from the early work we did all the way back in 2006. And then over time, we transitioned into building a public service. We call it SQL Azure. Now it's called Azure SQL Database. And yeah, I've been working in this space last, I guess, six or 7 years.
cool. Well, no, yeah, actually, I didn't realize. So that would have been, and I don't know if we can say that code name on the air, so I won't. But that there was a product that we were going to turn that private cloud into publicly that just kind of never, just didn't ever materialize, right?
I mean, for a while we had actually a preview of that service, right? I think we called it SQL Server Data Services.
Okay.
But then eventually we figured that actually running real SQL Server over SQL native SQL protocols is actually much more appealing to our customers, right? So we switched to doing
Go
that.
figure, right? People want to be able to write straight ADO.NET, well, cool. No, that's great. You were doing kind of hardcore development back then. So now you're an architect. How did you like? What do you do as an architect these days?
So I'm actually one of the architects in the SQL Server team, but yeah, I focus mostly on Azure SQL DB, and we sort of oversee the design, the general high-level design, but we also participate in a more sort of detailed implementation, and even to this day, actually still do some coding.
Is that a contention point there, right? If you don't write code every so often, it just doesn't feel right, or you know.
Well, yes, I think you sort of always want to be close to the ground and to the reality of what it takes to deliver and run the service. And yeah, I look every day at various incidents and help out with various lifesite issues if needed.
Cool. So, what's probably the big? I mean, going from on-prem to cloud, right? I've known it for a long time now, and it just kind of feels natural. But, it really was a shift over the years. I mean, what's probably the biggest thing you've learned going from this on-prem world and some of the internal cloud stuff, but now to this massive scale public cloud stuff? And what if you could go back, what, 8, 9 years? What would you want to whack yourself on the head and say, you need to think about this, right?
Well, I think it's actually learnings for both us and the customers, but I think we've never been able to iterate so quickly than we can do now. And it actually is great power to deliver value to our customers quickly, but also it's a great responsibility because of those massive but essentially homogeneous systems, right? So we take great care trying to make sure that the quality of the code that we deploy is great, right? And we very carefully monitor as, for example, things are rolling out, right? Which is very different where in sort of a private on-premise world, there's often
Double
DBA or
upgrades.
yeah, it's like the upgrade, the responsibility for upgrade is pushed to somebody else, which also acts as additional sort of gate, so to speak, right, of testing and so on. But obviously, that's a burden that our customers have to do, right? So we're happy to solve that problem, right? But we're trying to approach it in very mindful and careful and controlled way.
Yeah, no, I actually I you know, and I say it a little bit in jest that there's no upgrade in the on-premises world, but I mean, I worked lots and lots of cases when I was still doing on-premises work where the fix was, dude, just run the latest patch. We spent 6, 7 days tracking something down and only found that it's a known issue. When we find known issues in Azure, we fix them, right? You guys fix them
That
and you push out the fix.
is true. It's like in many cases, the reason that people are reluctant to change because change is going to potentially break something, right? But what we found is that in the cloud space, it's you have to practice everything that you do, and you have to practice making changes. And the best way of doing it is making small incremental changes, which are easy to roll back or understand what truly changed, as opposed to doing a massive upgrade where it's very hard to tell what happened. So I think that's another sort of differentiator and learning of how we approach things in the cloud.
So that's interesting. So it's actually, you think it's actually easier to do a bunch of smaller changes faster because like you
Absolutely,
said, you
yeah.
know what you're doing and you know what it was versus kind of like overtest and then do something bigger.
Well, no, we still have to be careful and test because customers are betting their business on our platform. But in terms of understanding what it's actually including in the payload of being deployed, and based on that, we can tailor what exactly we're trying to monitor and how the system behaves. And not to, we all obviously look for general anomalies and catch things, but we can also do additional validations tailored to a specific change which we're rolling out. And
Huh, that makes sense.
we're
Okay.
always able to roll back. I think that's a key thing. So
Thomas, I gotta say that I'm, very, very impressed with the kind of work that you do because not only are you doing stuff which is super hard in the cloud, right? I mean, building a cloud platform is probably one of the most difficult things to do, but also, writing SQL Server or being involved with SQL Server and writing the code for SQL Server is also probably one of the most difficult and most complex products that Microsoft has put out. And yeah, you're working putting SQL Server in the cloud. I mean, it's just a tremendous credential that you have over there. But being an architect, would you like is there a reason why a customer would not want to put SQL Server, use the SQL Server in the cloud? I mean, that's for a minute, let's just ignore the whole thing about, data, whatever, sovereignty or privacy concern. Other than that, as an architect, I'm sure you probably get this question on a regular basis. Why would a customer or why would you recommend that someone not put their database in the cloud?
think the data sort of sovereignty and trust is the main probably challenge. In reality, we have two SQL Server-based offerings in Azure space. We have Azure SQL DB, which is the platform as a service, and we have a SQL Server in a VM, which is fully compatible on-premise version. In the Azure SQL DB, we are not 100% currently compatible with SQL Server, but with our recent V12 release, we are very pretty close. So there might be some sort of small gotchas there, but overall, no, we've definitely seen the trend of our customers moving, because infrastructure-wise, it's much easier to have it in Azure and public cloud. If you want to have a geo-redundant copy, that's as simple as a few clicks in a portal or a SQL command, right? Without any upfront sort of capital investment or and the whole elasticity aspect of the cloud is actually also very appealing to our customers. We see customers upgrading their databases to a higher performance level when they need it, and then downgrading them nightly to save on their bill. So
Yeah.
Really, I didn't recall people doing that before, but that's interesting that people have gotten that sophisticated. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Economic drivers, I guess, definitely. So.
But Thomas, how about for chatty applications though? If an application is very chatty with the database, does it make sense at that point to move both the data, the application and the database to the cloud, or splitting it up at that point may, does not make a whole lot of sense, right?
Yeah, actually, you're right. Most of our customers that use Azure SQL DB, they tend to have their web tier or compute tier, so to speak, in Azure as well, because of latency.
Correct.
But obviously, they still connect remotely for various administration tasks or diagnosing and similar things.
I had one question, Thomas, too. One of the things I hear out in the field a lot from customers is when they're working with this new platform, they say, okay, so you can run SQL Server up there and you're going to manage it for me. So basically, I don't have to patch SQL. I don't have to do all this maintenance anymore. But one of the questions I hear is, what happens, and I've never seen it happen, so maybe you could shed some light on it. What happens if like something is deprecated in T-SQL? What if something actually is removed or something in the future? How's that going to happen? Because, you know, if they were controlling it on-prem, they could obviously plan for it and change their code. But what if they were using that code or one of their queries uses that thing that gets deprecated?
So it's actually a very interesting topic. So one thing is that Azure has official 1 year deprecation policy. So we're to give our customers enough lead time if we do change. But another thing is for things like SQL Server features, where we've been announcing deprecation in our on-premise product, and it will take us multiple releases to phase them out. Here, actually, in Azure, we have much better telemetry of what's truly being used by our customers. And if that feature is actually indeed being used, then that's very good input for us to actually keep it there and keep our customers and their applications happy and not deprecate it. So in fact, with our SQL Azure V12 release, pretty much all the deprecated features which were martyr deprecated in SQL Server are fully available, and we don't have any immediate plans on removing them.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's pretty cool, though, that we're actually, right? I know there's some telemetry in the on-premises products these days, but you know, like you said, it's nowhere near as rich as what we can do in the cloud. I mean, if we know nobody's using it, we know it's okay to deprecate it. But if and I'm, you know, who knows what the number is? But if n number of people are using it, you're saying basically we would really consider not deprecating it without
Exactly,
you know, kind of a
exactly.
clear path.
Yeah, or because we know who those customers are, we can obviously reach out to them and try to, you know, suggest a better alternative if there is actually a good technical reason or to deprecate or this. Yeah.
Now, in terms of the parity between the on-premises version and the cloud-based version of SQL Server, I know recently I saw this question come up probably at one of our internal DLs about SQL Server reporting services. Is that something that we cover in the on-premises version, or do we have similar functionality for that?
We don't currently have
Used
that directly.
to.
We used to have it, but now I think we have powerbi.com where you can run reports against Azure SQL DB.
Oh, I see. So that's the equivalent. It's opposed to similar
Yeah,
language constructs
you can
and
do Power
whatnot.
BI, some Power BI reports.
Okay.
I think that's probably the closest analytics equivalent.
Yeah, I can speak again too, back to Sajid's point earlier about why somebody wouldn't want to move it there. Definitely with some of the new features, especially TDE, that was like a huge barrier. I mean, a lot of people said we cannot do that unless we have transparent data encryption. So once I came, that was for me, I saw a lot of more people say, yeah, now it's more attractive, you know.
Yeah, I've actually, so I know some of the SQL Azure, the folks who are doing SQL Azure support still, and what they're telling me is, especially with the V12 stuff, that they're actually seeing people coming back, right? That had left because they couldn't get some feature that TDE, whatever, they couldn't get it, and so they either kind of played with SQL Azure and then kind of abandoned it, but now as they're looking at the economics and running SQL Server in an IaaSVM is not cheap. They're starting to come back because the features are there and the price point's much, much better.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think Evan just put this in our little IAM window just now that there's this new SQL Azure, well, Azure SQL Database Premium Performance Level that's available now, P4 and a P11. And I guess, I mean, we can comment on that, but generally I see like there's a lot of levels now, right? I don't know how many there are. I did talk about P3 and
Well, we have
P6.
three actually or four major editions. We have a
Right.
basic, standard, premium, and data warehousing edition now in public preview. And then within each edition, we have different performance levels depending on application needs. So you can go all the way from P1, which is 100 DTUs, to I think P11 is probably 1200 or 1400, I forget now. But again, depending on your application needs, and you can scale it up and down as you need it.
So this was actually something that was coming as I was leaving. What is a DTU?
DTU is a database throughput unit, and it's just a way for us to abstract database performance because as we phase in new hardware and phase out old, we wanted to have something that's consistent and we can explain to our customers. So we have this cloud database benchmark where it's described on, I think, MSDN, but it's one of the TPC benchmark sort of derivatives, probably, simulating transaction processing. And that's what we use to measure and establish the DTU levels.
Oh, okay. So you basically, this is our standard workload. If you can run 10 times the standard workload, then that's
Exactly, yeah. So if you have 100
10.
DTUs and
Oh,
200,
okay.
and yeah, you're getting twice as much throughput essentially
Okay.
on that benchmark.
Okay.
But
That's cool. Yeah.
how do customers make that decision? That I mean, like, how do they decide which level to pick? Seems like a difficult choice, right?
Well, yes, I think initially you probably make a guess, and some of it is also driven by choice of the edition. Because some of the geo replication, for example, features are very little bit. But then we also have DMVs, database dynamic management views, which actually show you how close to your DTU ceiling your workload is, right? So that actually helps you to size, right? And
Oh,
plus,
I see.
in Azure Portal, we also have a variety of graphs and metrics to help you to choose the right performance objective based on your workload.
I see. So you look at that and you see if you're nowhere near your limit, then you can scale down. But if you're getting close to the limit, you can scale up.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah, and I think you guys, I saw some announcements not too long ago that you guys are starting to invest in. I think Sajid, it was you that said customers are wanting to move this stuff because they don't want to manage the hardware, they don't want to manage the instance, but they still do need to manage their databases, right? They got to do index maintenance and the like. It looks like you guys are starting to add features in
We are
that space.
starting
Could you
to add
address that?
features in that space. So we recently came out with an index tuning advisor preview, which you can try on Azure Portal. But yes, we will make indexing recommendations based on the telemetry that we have. So yeah, eventually, over time, we want to be able to automate more and more and make the database self-tuning to add additional value to our customers.
That's cool. Now, do you, now, kind of the big question, right? Because there are workloads that will never, probably not never, for a long time, they're not going to be a good fit for Azure SQL Database. How do you guys kind of plug back into the on-premises product?
So we actually feed back the learnings from running our cloud system back into on-premise. For example, in SQL Server 2014, we added IO governance to SQL Server resource government. And that work was driven initially by the need to have IO governance inside Azure SQLDB to guarantee predictable performance for our customers. Right? So many of our learnings, which we find firsthand by running SQL Server in our service, we very then automatically try to ship them for our on-premise customers.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that I know really struck me, and I can't remember the specifics. You may remember the versions, but I want to say that the SQL Server 2012 engine shipped in Azure before we did on premises.
That is true, and we continue doing that to this day. For example, our future release around the same time we ship our community technical preview CTPs, those bits get deployed to Azure SQLDB, right? So yeah, I mean you can get. I think even on the our one of our recently available features that became generally available, the row level security, now it's fully supported and generally available in Azure SQLDB before it's available in a RTM'd on-premise product.
So that's going to drive significantly higher quality ultimately in the on-premises product because, this thing, it's not just tested by some people. This
Oh
is.
yeah, it's literally battle proven in the real cloud service, yeah.
That's cool.
Now, Thomas, as I mentioned earlier, I'm at MCS, and my longtime customer has been as a financial services company, probably one of the biggest in the world, I would say. And I have often asked him about, hey, have you thought about putting your stuff in the cloud? How about moving this little database to Azure or this little app to Azure? And they shiver when I tell them that, and they're like, oh, I don't want my data being next to somebody else's data. They kind of get these nightmares floating in their head. I mean, I'm sure you've heard this from other customers. How do you approach these customers? What do you tell them?
Well, we have strict security isolation across different tenants within the service. So obviously one financial company cannot access somebody else, some other financial company's data, even if they're hosted in the same cloud service. And we also have very strict compliance checks, which we get audited yearly because we have see, various federal certifications like FedRAMP and so on. Which strictly control how we operate the service. So we do approach customer data very diligently, and we value the trust that they've given us. But I think if coming back to financial data, I think over time more and more data will trickle into cloud simply because of economics and the ease and scale that's available in the cloud. I think it will probably be similar to what happened to email systems and where everyone used to run their own email server back in the day, and now only most major corporations probably which have a stricter security requirement still do. But lots of other companies use Office 365, for example, right?
Okay, so then the way to approach it, I mean, obviously, we want to try and get these companies to at least look at the cloud now. What's a way that we could get them to test the waters, and are there any programs, or we have any tools that let them kind of see that the data is safe and whatever.
Well, we've got all
Yeah.
the trust center stuff, right? It's probably a good place for them to start.
Yeah, we have various documentation on our internal processes and the certifications that we have. I think that's probably a very good proof point.
The other thing, Sajid, is, I mean, it's like, sign up for a free trial and just go play.
Yeah. No,
Yeah, even
definitely.
financial companies surely have lots of databases which are either small or we don't have extremely high business impact data, which we could do a trial on Azure.
Sure. Yep. Great. Thanks.
Yeah, no, that's great, Thomas. I mean, it's really, I had actually forgotten about, you guys feeding stuff back into the on-prem directly. It's just really neat to see this product grow up and how big it is now, compared to what it was. I mean, I remember when we knew every customer by name, basically.
Yeah, now I think these days we definitely have over 1 million, I think probably closer to 1.5 million databases in the
Really?
service.
Wow. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Well, no, this is really cool. Thank you for coming on. Kale, so do you guys have any other questions for him?
No, this has been great, Thomas. Thanks for coming on. This is
Yeah,
really
my pleasure.
enlightening. Appreciate it. Yeah.
And I really like that you guys saved to releasing the two features and telling the world till right on a podcast. So, like, we can be the first people to talk about
I know, the timing was impeccable.
it. Especially when you said something earlier about, well, I'll mention my other ones, our SQL
Yeah.
stuff later on. He was waiting to hit send in his mailbox.
That's right.
Okay, great. Well, I think that's it, and we will. Thomas, thank you again for coming on. Sajid, Kale, we're. I don't know if we have a topic for next week yet. Do we?
We have a speaker lined up for next week. So
Okay, cool.
we'll talk to
All
somebody.
right.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.